Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Alex King and Daniel Mangana. This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today. We're so happy that Alex is back with us today. Looking good there, Alex. And you got your supernatural shirt on, so you're in good stead.
I am.
That's a good thing, because I mean, we've been missing you. Every single week that you're not here, we keep Daniel, isn't it true? Every single time she's not here, I'm saying how much I miss her, and you're saying the same thing. So we're glad you're back.
Really glad. Oh, it's nice to be missed.
So we've got a few things that came in. We have an email from a listener. We have an email that came in from Abraham Hicks that I wanted to bring up. And believe it or not, I have an article from Popular Mechanics I want to bring up. So it's going to be an interesting day. But we'll start off with the email from Barbie, who just wrote in to say, she was responding to something we said last week. She said, the live stream has been quiet lately because you've done a phenomenal job at promoting and directing everyone to the app, which is an interesting point. I hadn't thought of that.
Good point.
Yeah. So well done to you and Dan Segways. And she says she's looking forward to the new ebook gift that's going to be coming out. Alex, I promised everybody I was going to turn that book that a bunch of us wrote a couple of years ago, Real Success Stories of the Law of Attraction, into something that goes onto the app. So that's going to be coming out in the next couple of months. Yeah, that's going to be good. But yeah, thank you, Barbie. It was a good point. And Dan, I guess Barbie wanted to make sure that you knew and realized your segue attempts are noted and noticed and appreciated.
Gee shucks, guys. You know, it's make a voice shy.
I don't think I've ever heard you say that. That's crazy.
Me either.
Okay, the second thing.
See me.
Yes, folks, Thursday is now officially back. So the second thing I got was an email. Now, this is one of the email lists I'm on regularly. This is the Abraham Hicks email. And
we got a personal email from Abraham Hicks. I feel special.
Well, that would be really cool. I would like that one. But yeah, but this is close, you know.
Okay.
And I just brought it in because I wanted to see what you guys thought about what they're saying here. Okay. So here it goes. It says, you cannot be separated from that which you are calling God. People hear us say, reach for the thought that feels best. And they think, oh no, I need to listen to what God wants. But aren't we talking about the same thing? Aren't your emotions guiding you to that connection? And doesn't the word God just set you off on all kinds of tangents that don't have anything to do with your relationship with that which is this eternal energy of love that is your source? So a little controversial. Just curious to see what you guys think about that.
Jinx.
Well, since you said jinx, you get to go first, Alex.
Dang it. Why is it always me?
Well, we're just welcoming you back. That's all it is.
Yeah, but now I'm rusty. So.
Okay. Well, then
in a few weeks.
We'll give you a moment to recollect your thoughts and then come back.
Talk amongst myself.
Do you want to go, Dan, or should I go? You're going to bow to me. Okay. I agree with him. Of course, then again, I've always had a thing about the word God, but, you know, in this case, what they're talking about is reaching for a God that's outside of ourselves. And that's the way I hear it when I read that. And I was kind of curious to see if you guys would see it the same way. But God isn't external. God's internal. So, you know, saying, well, oh, no, I need to listen to what God wants. Wait a minute. You are God.
Right.
Time out here. You know, God is not some being sitting on a throne casting judgment down on you. So I think we can cast that one aside, you know? We can just say, oh, yeah, I am listening to God when I'm putting my thoughts out there. I am part of the God world, the God universe, if you will. So that's the way I see it. Wow, I haven't seen you guys this quiet in ages.
This is tough. I mean, okay. I'll say I agree. But Walt, you basically said everything I was going to say. So, yes, I do agree that, but everything encompasses God. Everything.
Dan sends us a message.
Sorry, Dan.
He says, I'm jinxed. Oh, like, my goodness.
I'm dead.
He sent us a chat message, everybody. He said that he's jinxed, and that's what we're laughing at. Like, what? Wait a bit.
I said Daniel.
Oh, in England, you have to say it three times.
Oh, no, not here.
Oh, that's a bit weak.
Yeah, it is. What do you want from us?
Okay.
This is the instant gratification culture. Didn't you know that?
Yeah.
Well, kudos in this event.
We cut it from 3 to 1.
But not from other things. So, is this the daily... because I've got... Someone managed to convince me to go on a list, but they share, like, an excerpt from one of their talks.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's one of those, yes.
I don't remember this one. I thought I got them all. When did this one come out?
Oh, jeez. It wasn't today. It was recent, but I don't remember exactly when it was.
I don't remember it. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
There's not much Daniel doesn't remember.
I'll tell you something else that's interesting about the stuff that they send out. They send it out on a 2-year cycle. I've been on it long enough, and I've been tracking it long enough that I found that every 2 years they start all over again.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm working on the Do It With Dan daily contact. At the moment, we're using Telegram, and what's going to happen is we're going to convert all of my little daily random musings into a structured.
Cool.
And we're probably going to do like 3 months.
I like that.
Months.
Nice.
But only weekdays. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's good.
And I'm working on my Do It With Dan coffee table book of Danisms.
Nice.
Mapping. And they'll be doing this the way. But so God, we're talking about God,
right? I think it really comes down to how does one conceive God, and there are going to be different answers on that.
I think it depends. Yeah. And that's what's going to say. I don't think there's a cookie cutter thing to this. It's going to come down to a person's personal relationship to source, however that's defined, whether it's God, universe, source, the divine, quantum field, or science, or the Rolling Stones, like whatever it is that you define as that thing, or strength, okay, the strength, we've got that one too. So I would say, yeah, infinite intelligence probably has this one on the nose, but hey, I'm just a humble jinxed human.
Yes, Thursdays are definitely back, no doubt about it. Okay.
Yeah, I have to say, Alex, we've been really serious since you've been away. Like,
oh, no.
Yes.
Serious people doing serious things. Alex comes back and it's, time to laugh again.
It's true. It's true.
Serious Thursdays doesn't rhyme.
No, not really. No, but that's why we're glad that you're back because,
thank you. Glad to be back.
Okay. So,
Furious
like I said,
Thursdays
I found...
works.
That's
what'd
good.
You say?
Furious Thursdays works.
Oh, no.
I guess not. That didn't quite work, apparently.
Oh, no.
Why so serious?
I'm going to walk away because I'm going to cancel everybody right now. Dad jokes are getting worse, Daniel.
And that means they're getting better. Inverse relationship to quality. So,
but you have to give him, you know, a little extra credit for that because he is a dad now. So he gets to do dad jokes. That's the whole point.
Well, that's why I'm acknowledging it.
Thank you, Ethan, for my ticket to the dad joke club.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Your job is done.
Oh, boy.
Sorry, what were you saying, Daniel, before we rudely interrupted you?
No, I was rudely interrupting the Philidoth to come back to Theoretheneth and discussing.
Lord, help us all.
Which angulation?
Whichever one you pray to, that it doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
Everybody's got somebody different.
Yeah. Or do they?
Or do they? Some people could have the same.
Well, when I look at my purple brick theory, everyone's looking at the same brick from a different angle.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Depending on the lighting, it might not even be purple anymore.
Ooh, down the rabbit hole we go.
But there's also there's different grades of purple. There's violet, there's mauve, there's all kinds of.
Indigo?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the love child of purple and blue.
Yes.
That's a good way to describe it, sure. Okay, well, this is about as crazy as we often get, so that seems appropriate as a lead-in to the Popular Mechanics article that I found.
Okay.
And it'll give you a very quick clue of what we're talking about here when I read you the title of the article. It's scientists are pretty sure they found a portal to the fifth dimension. So the question I wanted to bring up is, well, is science fiction and spirituality finally coming together on a concept?
I think they have come together on concepts. They just didn't know the name of the person they came to the dance with.
That would make sense. I just wanted to make sure we're all three talking about the same thing. I think we are. I mean, the terminology that science is using these days, you have to have a glossary every time that you read something, trying to figure out what the heck all the different words mean. But they're talking about dark matter, which this is really interesting. The article admits they don't know where it is or what it looks like, and they've never seen it before, but they're willing to acknowledge that it's there, which just strikes me as being so spiritual. I love it.
mathematics in many instances is becoming the portal between the seen and the unseen. Because something makes sense mathematically, even though it's not been experienced. So when they start, I was listening to, it was a podcast or something about the dimensions, and mathematically they've proven the probability of everything up to the 12th dimension. But after that, the maths makes, sort of making sense, and they can't hold, it can't be held together. Mm-hmm. So they haven't been there or experienced them, but from the maths, they know that it's there.
Math is a wonderful thing, I guess, then.
Yeah. Numbers are the language of the universe.
That's
not that fluent, but there we go.
The thing that's scary is I used to be pretty good in math, and I don't understand any of it anymore. It has gotten so far outside my understanding. I have no idea what they're talking about, but it sounds cool. It's just I wouldn't pass an SAT test these days, that's for sure, because
I wouldn't have passed it back then and won't now.
Like on the Flash when they all start putting all these squiggles.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's like, this isn't, what is that? Oh, you missed the squiggly squiggle in the squiggly
the
thing.
Squiggle, the square room.
There's the portal. There's the portal yes. to the squiggle dimension. But I'd say, yeah, I agree with you. It's very spiritual and faith-led. Oh, you know, we haven't seen it. And yet faith is the evidence of things not seen.
Mm-hmm.
So, mathematics is faith, then we could say by that definition.
And meanwhile, about 500 mathematicians fell over dead when you say that.
Come a long way to say that.
Yeah.
Come at me, bro. Come at me.
I also learned a new word from the world of physics that I didn't know. Fermion. Have you guys ever heard of a fermion?
No.
Sounds like a Vidal Sassoon advert.
It kind of does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Fermion.
It seems to be like a broad term that covers a wide variety of subatomic particles. I know quarks are included in there. I think electrons and protons are under certain circumstances that I don't quite gather. But fermion, yeah. So next time that you hear... Next time you hear that brought up on Jeopardy, you can say, well, I have some idea what it is, and maybe even come up with the right answer for Jeopardy. Who knows?
What is a fermion?
Yes, what is a fermion? Everybody says, what?
Right? How do you even know that? Don't worry about it.
I mean, crazy. But dark matter, that's been around as a concept for a long time, dating back pretty much to Einstein.
Yeah.
And that concept in and of itself is... It was basically created originally, I think, to try to explain why it was that they perceive and identify certain behaviors in space that didn't make sense.
What is dark? Kind of what is dark matter? What is dark matter? Let's clue up the listeners, because I'm sure many people think that we're referring to an episode from Stargate SG-1.
We might be, for all I know. I mean, I can't say I'm an expert on dark matter. I'm barely an expert on SG-1. So, hey, you know, it's a good explanation as far as I'm concerned. But if you look at Wikipedia, it says that dark matter is a form of matter thought to account for approximately 85% of the matter in the universe and about a quarter of its total mass. Or, I'm sorry, total of its mass energy density, which they actually give a constant for it, 2.241 times 10 to the minus 27th kilograms per cubic meter. Who the heck comes up with these?
People from Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
The Sheldons of this world.
But yeah, according to the theory, most of the matter in the universe is dark matter, and we've never been able to see it. And, you know, it's a really nice faith principle as far as I'm concerned.
Mm. You know, so much of it is in the world, yet we haven't seen it and can't identify it.
Well, apparently most of it's in space, if you hear what, you know, the scientists have been trying to tell us. But I think you're probably right. I think it's in the world. I think it's everywhere.
It's got to be.
Well, Earth is such a small squiggle in the whole squiggliness of the entirety of everything. That
you mean this Earth?
Probably.
This Earth.
It probably does account for a big chunk. Most of it is going to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, isn't the Earth out there either? I mean, it's not like the Earth is... Here you have the Earth, and the rest of it is the universe, and they're two separate things. That's not the way it really is.
We out here. We out here.
It depends on if we are here. Trump or not.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to go there. That's too far down the rabbit hole for me today.
I'm joking. We all know that he's God's gift to humanity. Vegans, beware. We're coming for you in the name of America.
I'm dead.
Please come back.
Welcome back to Thursdays.
So, no, but honestly, like, if we look at what dark matter is doing, it's accounting. If we look at light, the spectrum of light, we only perceive a little bit of it,
mm-hmm.
right? The rainbow. As soon as we move outside of the rainbow, we move outside of our capacity to engage with it with our senses. I mean, for me, when I'm in my work, I talk about fifth dimension or 5D. I'm talking about anything that we are no longer using our five senses to engage with. That's what I consider that to be. Once we move beyond the barrier of time, we're no longer using our senses. We're back to the now and blah, blah, blah. Now, obviously, some people have extrasensory perception where they can communicate with these. And we can use instruments, you know, mechanical instruments to engage with it. But dark matter, I think, is once we go beyond the capacity even to use the instruments that we have the technology to perceive, that's when we get into the dark matter, I think.
That's a good explanation. That's kind of like a non-scientific explanation.
Yeah.
I'm not a scientist. Science for the masses, you know.
Yeah, because I'm not going to disrespect scientists. But I say, yeah, let's talk about the quantum. I've not got a physics degree.
I'm not even close to a physics degree. I want a new one, but that's about it. Yeah.
What's the opposite of a physics degree? Because that's what I want to go for.
I love it.
Oh, Lord. But I do want to Google that.
Is it liberal arts? Because that's, I'm fine with that.
What is the opposite of a physics degree? The opposite of physics. What is the opposite? What?
I don't think you're going to get a straight answer.
No, people are just trying to clickbait me.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to get me, mate. You're not going to get me.
He's too strong for this.
The force is strong with this one. What is the opposite of physics? Blockages and harms. Yeah, get out of here, mate. Quora.com. Physics is an attempt to Solipsism.
Solipsism, oh, yes. Okay.
What is that?
The opposite of physics is to make some guesses without any facts, ignore patterns, and then make statements that have no foundation in anything. Be vegan.
So the human race.
Well, solipsism is essentially defining what you're trying to understand by using the term that you're trying to understand, which you're not supposed to do.
Okay.
Anyway, I think that's cool.
Well, I'm going to major in that.
Well, thank you.
You're going to major in solipsism.
Yep. Just gonna, matter of fact, I'm making up my major as I'm making up my degree, so I'm just going to plaster something on the wall.
Okay.
It's Who gonna, are I'm you? Mike Ross? Yes,
they will see it.
We're looking forward to it.
Yep.
I mean, are you going to do a doctoral thesis? I'm kind of curious.
No, that seems like work. That's something we wouldn't do.
Oh, this is the easy degree.
Yeah. It's the opposite of physics. Hello.
Hello.
The thing that is really cool about Thursdays, and I'd forgotten this because we haven't had a chance to do it in such a long time, is not only do we go down rabbit holes, we go down rabbit holes from which there are no exits.
Oh. Who wants exits from the rabbit hole? What fun is that?
That's like getting off the water slide by taking an exit. Like, come on.
Set me free from the rabbit hole. I want to be free.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm going to try one more time and then I'll give up on the topic. But... Dark matter, 85% of the universe, according to the Wikipedia article. And who am I to disagree with Wikipedia? So 85% of the universe, and the Earth, I am positing, is part of the universe. So therefore, 85% of the Earth and the people on it and all of our life is dark matter.
That's what I'm saying. So how do we not have seen it or identified it yet?
Because we don't have the technology.
Yet
we haven't got that technology yet, but as we do get that technology, because at one point gamma rays would have fallen into dark matter.
Good point.
Or the realm of dark matter-esque things, should I say. But now we have x-ray, infrared, also ultraviolet. All of these bad boys would have been considered to be dark matter-esque until we developed the technology to be able to perceive it beyond the mathematical proof that demonstrated its existence.
Yeah.
And look what we got out of it. I mean, they discovered microwaves and they turned them into microwave ovens. I mean, you know, it was very practical.
Once we can see it, then we can do something with it.
That's right. So I guess that's the answer to your question, Alex. They haven't figured out how to see it yet, so that's why we don't know about it, other than theoretically. But if we know that it's there...
There's a lot out there for us not to know what's going on.
Yeah, but this is par for the course, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, most of what's going on, we don't really understand that it's going on.
True.
That's we'll just, get there. That's normal. Yeah. And, you know, I don't worry about it, personally. I don't know about you. I just don't worry about it.
Wasn't really on my top 10 list, but.
Right, exactly.
I keep thinking about this. Morning, turn off the alarm. Did we discover dark matter today? Let me Google it. That's me every day.
I had no idea it was weighing on your mind so heavily. That's interesting.
It was, okay. And I'm glad you brought it up because I thought I was alone.
So anyway, we're really good at derailing each other. Did you guys notice that? So getting back to what I was going to say about dark matter, if like 85% of our world here is dark matter, is it too big of a leap to suggest that a lot of the things we talk about here on the show about law of attraction, spirituality, you know, source energy, auras, you know, all the various things that we've talked about. Is it too big of a leap of faith to say that dark matter plays a role in all that stuff?
I don't know about plays a role.
could it be
that? Well, I can't say more than that.
Could it be the field in which all this fun happens?
Yeah, it could be. It could be. And if dark matter's properties are affecting that field, then we're basically playing on a rigged field. We didn't know how the game was rigged. Once again, we are learning the rules of the game after we started playing the game.
Mm-hmm. That's how I always play.
Yeah, we're good at that. We like do this a lot, actually.
Yeah, I like to learn as I go along.
Mm. How does it work out for you?
Great. I'm a hands-on learner, so I need to be, like, in the nitty-gritty of it in order for it to, like, click up here.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I guess I could see that. I mean, personally, I would not have objected if they had handed me a manual when I got here, but, you know, I guess that's just not the way the game is played here.
I was like, nah, I'm good. I'll figure it out.
Send me in. I want to have fun.
No, I was in the meeting and I was like, yeah, contrast. Yeah. Got it. Okay. Let me in.
Oh, maybe that's what happened to me. Maybe that's what happened. What? I spent 30 years of my life trapped in the dark matter. And that's why I was so confused. I didn't know I was trapped in dark. I knew I was trapped. My life wasn't going anywhere. I didn't enjoy any of it. Now I know why I was trapped in the dark matter.
Sounds legit to me. No.
I guess.
If you want it to work, it works.
I guess so.
It's one of those predetermined things. Your desire makes it so.
Yes.
Well, I think what I will do is I will just let science continue to do its stuff because, like I said, when I was reading the article, I barely understood what they were saying. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time I had to go look up, you know, terminology just to find out what they were talking about. And even then, I barely understood what they're saying. So I think I'll just wait for them to develop it a little bit further and check back in. You know, I'll do like you do. I'll check the Google headlines to see, is there anything new about black matter or dark matter, you know?
And exactly.
You know, what comes up.
Set a Google alert, as a matter of fact.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Set it for the year 2046, you know.
We'll set it for prediction. Now. And then, you know, see how it goes.
That's right. Oh, okay. Well, that's what I brought to the table today. So after that, we can just go wherever we want to go. Maybe this is a time to actually remind people about the app and then we can figure out what we're talking about after that. What do you think? So,
I agree.
Good to me.
First of all, thank you to Barbie for sending in the email. We want to encourage more people to send in emails. That's what we created the app for. And in fact, Barbie, I think, identified why we've been getting fewer live stream messages and more emails because of people using the app. So thank you very much to those of you who are using the app. We really appreciate it. And for those of you who haven't spoken up yet, come on, join in the fun, join in the insanity, especially on Thursdays. Have we figured out what we call Thursdays yet? I mean, Dan was calling them Theorious Thursdays, but that isn't really what we voted on, I don't think.
Oh,
yeah, you guys are prejudiced. your chakras are definitely out of alignment. I bet you've been eating meat.
That must be it. Oh, man.
I got to bring something up. Let me finish the promo first, which is that make sure that you use the app to send in your questions and comments because we want to include them in the show like we did with Barbies. And check us out on YouTube as well because, you know, that way you can actually see us when we're being insane like we are today. And, of course, now that we have the lovely Alex back to explain to people how to find us on YouTube, then Dan and I can both relax. So, Alex, how do they find us on YouTube?
Well, you go to YouTube, search LOA Today podcast videos, and once you see our smiling faces, click down below to the red subscribe button. Next to the red subscribe button, there's a little silver bell. Make sure you click all so you will always be notified when we are live.
So there it is. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, getting back to, I'm not sure where we're getting back to, but I guess I was just going back to the question of dark matter. I keep thinking about this dark matter thing. Like, I've got dark matter on the brain right now.
You do have dark matter on the brain.
Apparently, 85% of it. I mean, if it's evenly distributed, I don't know how well it's distributed myself, but, you know, if it is, you know.
When we look at density, he says he's not a scientist and then goes down the rabbit hole. More like a density, the space. No, but the space between particles is filled with something. There was no empty space in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that empty space that creates the, you know, more dense or less dense is perhaps filled with dark matter. It's the interconnected tissue of the universe.
Okay.
I like that theory.
Yeah, that you can kind of emotionally grab onto that one. I like that one.
Scientists of the world, please do not barbecue me to your gods. I have no idea if what I'm saying is actually the thing, but it's a thing.
If it came to you, if it came and it felt good, it was a thing. It was something that you needed to bring out because it's what Linda and Rita called a drop-in. You got a drop-in. And the, when you got the drop-in and if it felt good, you had to put it out there because it was real.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. Well done, Daniel.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you're welcome. No problem. Just looking to see what else was in this. Oh, going back to the fifth dimension concept. Because, I mean, Daniel, you gave your definition of what you're talking about when you use the term fifth dimension, which, by the way, I appreciate because I've had that conversation with a number of co-hosts trying to get them to tell me what fifth dimension was. And I kept getting a lot of different answers that were, you know, they were reasonable answers. It's just that.
They were airy, flurry, fuffle.
But none of them really, you know, just grabbed me like, yes, that's the one that feels good. But yours was good. It's outside, everything outside of the world of our sensory range. So if it's something we can't sense, but it's there, then it's fifth dimension. Like, okay, yeah, okay, I can buy that one.
So wait, then what's fourth dimension?
Time.
Okay.
Yeah, most people put time in as the fourth. I don't know what's in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th that Dan was alluding to.
They've got maths to it, though.
Which is nice, but it's also helpful to us humans with our limited brain power to have analogies to associate those levels with. Yeah. Otherwise, they're just abstractions.
I have squiggles and square roots of bobbledy-boops. How many would you like?
By the way, does anyone here have any idea what those squiggles are about? I mean,
no.
Dude, no. If they're real squiggles, no, because it's math.
And the really weird thing is that I love the idea of maths, but I don't like to be examined or put under test conditions with maths.
Mm.
Like I find mathematical equations actually quite satisfying, but the thing is, I found out maybe 20 years too late, being Asperger's, unless I've got a maths teacher that actually takes me through the process, I have a complete meltdown and don't know what I'm doing. So
exactly.
If it needs to be systemized. If something's systemized, if someone says, when you do this, then you do that, then you do this, I'd be a bad boy mathematician.
Yep.
Because I do get it because my brain is naturally set up to do the maths, but only if I have the way to do it. So yes. All the squiggles I could be good with if I had a good teacher. And when I've had good maths teachers, that will be like, now we do this, now we do this, versus blah, 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 do the maths.
Right.
Now. That doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
You're reminding me of my sister. My sister had, well, she had two disadvantages. One disadvantage is she was younger than me by 1 year, so she would get my teachers after I was done with them, and I did pretty well with math, so they expected the same thing from her. They didn't get it, and so they were really hard on her, which was really not fair at all.
Oh, that's a rough way to go.
Yeah, that was not good. But the second thing was she learned after about, I think by like senior year of high school, she finally figured out with the help of a math teacher that all of her way of thinking was right-brained. She was very pictorial-oriented rather than logical left-brain-oriented. And mathematics is taught left-brain-oriented.
Yep.
So the particular teacher, and I can remember him because he was also the AP math teacher, or AP calculus, I guess it was, sat down with her and walked her through some of the basics of geometry and trigonometry and so forth using a pictorial approach, and she got it instantly. So I'm wondering, Daniel, is that kind of similar to what you're talking about? You said if they could show you A, B, and C what to do, then you're fine. Do you have a similar thing with the pictorial thing?
No, it doesn't have to be pictorial. It just has to be logically laid out.
just logically laid out.
Okay, as long as it's logically laid out, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Anything systemized, I can learn. Anything not systemized, I will melt down.
Which actually makes sense to me, because especially when we've gotten into the really deep conversations about the nature of spirit and source energy and our interaction with it and thoughts and so forth, you lay out really intricate abstract theories, and that requires having that ability to, you know, deal with stuff strung together like that. So it makes sense. It makes sense that that's a strength for you. I mean, Alex, you were nodding your head up and down. What was your thing with math? Was it that you just didn't get any of it, or did you find a particular method that worked? Or
no, I was. I had an issue way back. I want to say second grade, maybe third grade, where I was called up to the board. So I have like PTSD with math, on top of the fact that like I
didn't
get it. So I was called up to the board and to solve a math problem. I didn't know the answer, and the teacher made me stand there the entire day until I gave an answer.
Oh no.
Yeah. So
that's torture.
Yeah, literally the whole class staring at me, and I'm just standing like this for like the entire day. Yeah.
That's cruelty.
So anytime I get frustrated and there's a math problem involved. And I didn't even realize this till like years of therapy. And then that came up. So yeah, it was crazy. So I have an aversion to math and also like it just doesn't click in my brain. You can show me how to do it. I'll get it in that 1 second.
Yeah, you're ready to take the activating system and shut down.
Yeah, to keep and I'm just like, I'll go home. I can't do the homework, even though I just learned it in class not even a half hour ago.
Wow, yeah. There are a lot of people. I mean, yours is a particularly severe case because that particular math teacher was just abusive. But there are a lot of people who go through math classes in their primary and secondary school years, and they are learning a subject that they really are not prepared to learn. Mm-hmm. And that may sound strange, but I firmly believe all subjects need to be subjects that you're prepared for. And by prepared for, I mean you're ready for it. Like you're emotionally ready, you want it, you're excited, you're psyched, so that you're able to focus on it, and you're doing it because you're loving the idea of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And math is probably the most potentially damaging subject if you don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot in the broader society about, well, not so much anymore, but it used to be a big topic, illiteracy, you know, how much illiteracy there was. From my perspective, there's a much bigger problem with innumeracy, the inability to handle numbers.
It's the one we don't have.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Like dyscalculia is just as high up there as dyslexia, but nobody talks about it.
I first noticed it back when I first got out of college. I got out of college the year that we were in the middle of double-digit inflation, so there wasn't a whole lot of jobs available. So I just got whatever I could get, and I ended up getting a job as a bank teller. And you learn really quickly as a bank teller just how many people in the population have no idea how to balance a checkbook. I mean, it's like a large chunk of society just doesn't know how to do it. And even if they do know how to do it, they're so traumatized by what happened in their own experience with mathematics, they won't do it.
Yeah.
We literally had customers. Now, this was back in the 1980s. I imagine it's not all that different now. We literally had customers come into the bank for us to balance their checkbooks each month.
My grandmother was one of those people.
Right? Yeah. That's where I really became aware of just how serious the problem is. And my awareness has only grown over time. Mm-hmm. But it's a big deal. But now we're back
there because they stopped teaching it in school.
What do you mean?
Balancing checkbooks I took it in my time, but no class after.
Yeah, because they don't want people. That the system doesn't want people to understand money.
Yeah,
that's how they can print trillions of dollars and make people think that it's safe, but it ain't.
Yeah, and now it's like everything's got an app that does it for you, so everyone got lazy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and simple fact is that when you have an inability or perhaps even an emotional block to handling math, you end up avoiding math for most of your life, which is really sad.
Yeah.
Because there's so many areas of life where it actually becomes quite helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably one of the most basic things I can think of, cooking. working from a recipe. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times my wife will want to take a recipe and cut it down to half size and has trouble taking the fractions and dividing them in half.
Oh, that's what we're going for.
You know? And a lot of people have that problem. I can do it in my head quickly, but a lot of people can't do it at all. Even with a pen and paper, they can't do it.
Nope.
And it's not that it's a difficult operation. It's that there are difficult mental blocks in the way. Yeah. And those mental blocks.
When I was in third grade, I had fun. I had a blast memorizing the multiplication tables.
Did you?
Yeah. But that's the only part of math I like.
That's the only part.
Because it's got a rhythm and a rhyme to it. So it makes sense. It's like this equals this because of this.
That's true. Nobody ever studies the square root tables. It's true. Nobody ever does. What would be the point? What would you use it for?
Oh, man.
I mean, they could probably learn subtraction and multiplication for sure, and addition. Division, maybe.
Yeah, that's easy.
Division is actually pretty useful in everyday life, but yeah, simple things like taking a kitchen recipe and cutting it down to half size, that'll throw people off like crazy.
Yep.
And it's so simple. It's really not difficult to do at all, but that,
oh, I know.
That mental
Alexa
block just gets in the way. Just ask Alexa, yes.
Alexa, do some thinking for me, please.
Exactly. My hands are all covered in flour, so I can't Google it. So I need Alexa to do it.
Help me, Alexa, help me.
It's funny too, because I try to teach Louise, you know, the little tricks that I know, like for taking a fraction and dividing it in half. It's really simple. You just take the denominator and multiply by two, and that's your new fraction. It's literally that simple. And if I explain it to her, sometimes she'll get that. And sometimes she'll give me that look that says, I have no idea what you just said.
Yep. That's my face.
Yeah.
What you say, Willis?
Yeah, I'm always like, Kenny, math problem.
Yeah, right.
Or somebody will ask me, oh, yeah, what's this plus this? Dude, math. I don't know. I don't have my calculator app out. Leave me alone.
There's something to sit about, like, trusting, though, because, you know, how many people are actually dyslexic because they've fallen out of a space of trusting themselves because
of
some kind of trauma? Mm. Well, what's the word for the number one again about numbers? What do you call it?
Dyscalculia.
Dyscalculia. Like, how many people are in a space of dyscalculia because they were put through a space of trauma?
Yeah.
I think it's like almost all people who are having trouble with math fall into that category. You don't have to be on the spectrum. Everybody is in that category, I think.
I agree.
Who has trouble with math anyway. Yeah. Maybe that's just my own prejudice because I see so much of it. But wow. Yeah. That's really captured my attention for quite some time. And it's actually something I'm hoping will kind of take care of itself, iron itself out as time goes on, because I am seeing, and Daniel, you're a life coach, so you see more of this than I do, I think. I'm seeing more and more people gaining self-confidence, looking for ways to become more self-confident through, you know, things like trying to understand how to attract money into their lives, or how to, you know, utilize the law of attraction, or, you know, how to become conscious creators, how to utilize source energy, however you want to look at it. The more that people focus their attention on this, the more that they become self-loving, self-confident to a higher degree. And that is the kind of thing that enables things like math to start making sense.
Mm.
I mean, it's a long, slow motion process, but I think that's ultimately what happens. So at least that's what I keep telling myself. What's that?
I was going to say that a lot of what's going on right now could be helping and or hindering us because of, you know, students that are learning on their own right now are either thriving or not. So self-confidence coming from, I'm getting straight A's even though I'm working by myself at home, or the other way around. Mm-hmm. I'm not passing these classes because I have no interaction.
But my niece right now, she's thriving. She keeps getting like student of the week, like week.
Yeah, my niece too.
It's like, what? Faye, you killing it, girl? She's like, yeah, Michael, I'm doing it. She doesn't sound like that. She doesn't.
Okay. That, but... Okay.
But the question is that new? Is that new since the pandemic? She wasn't doing that before. Now she is.
She wasn't hitting the numbers like every single week like she is now.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
Like we are very blessed that all the kids in our family are pretty much, we haven't had any slow coaches at all. So it's like, who's gonna be the one that's gonna pop out the slower one? Because it's like, and we're very competitive by nature. Funny story. It was my sister's birthday on Monday. You're gonna laugh. You better laugh. Support me. I'm sensitive. So it's my sister's birthday, and they did like a quiz about my sister. And it was so funny to have so many man getters and like close things that like all doing this competing, to the point where my 7-year-old nephew and my 8-year-old great nephew did the team together, and they were like, we're gonna burn you, uncle, you can't get us. And it's like they kept me on my toes. They were like guessing and beating everybody else. I won, but it was very close. It's very close. But we're very, very competitive. Like as young as 7, they're like, we're gonna win. Ah! For me, a big part of my journey has actually been kind of putting the brakes on that, but still being a winner, but putting the brakes on it. But yeah, all of them are very. They're like, yeah, we're gonna be the best. Like they're really, really driven. So I don't know if it's just the pandemic, since she's really, really thriving, because she's always done very well. But now, like in the last month, I think she had it like 3 weeks out of 4. She got the prize as the star student. So I don't know. She's really thriving with homeschool.
Really good. Well, it's not terribly surprising. I mean, we don't really know Olga except for, you know, the occasional story that you tell about your experiences with her. But we know you. I mean, you went to Oxford, for goodness sake. You know, so if you've got that kind of influence going on in the family, I would imagine, you know, the Mangina clan is influenced by the fact that you're there. You were at that level, you know? You are at that level.
Yeah.
Especially if you have competition going on.
Oh, yeah.
Because you set the standard, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah. So, well done to the Mangina clan.
we're not that in American. But...
Actually, it's funny you mentioned competition. Early on in our relationship, Louise and I didn't really want to play any kind of games very much because we didn't want to be competitive with each other.
Oh, that's the best part of the relationship. What do you mean?
Not for us, it wasn't. Well, I'll speak for myself. Not for me, it wasn't.
Okay.
Because I tended to win a lot.
so you stopped it because you were winning all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I want to hear Louise's side of the story.
Okay. I'll bring her on sometime. You can ask her about it. But. Yeah. But let's put it this way. She reintroduced the idea of playing some games. So lately we've been playing games like Scrabble and Backgammon and things like that. And I guess maybe I have built up my self-love enough that I'm not, you know, totally put out about winning, because I'm okay with winning now, I guess.
I love myself enough to destroy you on the battlefield. My self-love will be your doom.
No, not that. No.
Love and light, and we'll have a green juice afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, one of the things that happens, this is why I was referring to the fact that you probably have such an influence on your family, Daniel. I think the same thing happens in any family. And in our little family, I think the same thing is happening there. So basically what I'm leading up to is Louise is getting better at stuff. Now she in her past was good at backgammon anyway. She was pretty good at it. So we were fairly evenly matched, but when we started playing again, first of all, we had to remember what the rules were. It had been so many years since we'd last played. Right. And then we started playing and I kept winning. And I was thinking to myself, no, just keep going. It's going to click. She's going to remember again. And then she's going to start winning. And sure enough, she started winning some games. And mm-hmm. I felt better. Like, and I could celebrate with her because, you know, she was, but the area where, I mean, you guys were laughing at the idea that we really weren't competing. You know where our competition really comes in with Scrabble? It isn't competing to see who can get the higher score. It's to see who can come up with the best word combinations that produce the most words out of putting one set of letters down. Like a crossword puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't matter how many points you get, but can you make like four words by putting down one word?
Right, right.
Because if you can do that, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you may only get 12 points for it instead of 72, but who cares? Hey, you made, you know, all these little words, it all work, you know?
It's all about what your end game is at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess that maybe that's a form of winning. I don't know.
It is.
I think so. Victory is victory.
Fact. Doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile.
And losing is losing.
Exactly.
I think it depends on how you define what winning is.
There is no definition outside of being the winner. Let's not do this soft, fluffy 8th place award stuff.
Trophy.
No, it's just, I think that there's... If we go back to, you know, the whole story about the, is it the butterfly that was coming out of the cocoon and they come to help the butterfly and then the butterfly can't fly. There's something mm-hmm. that comes from adversity.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And there's something that comes from the grit and drive to win, not at the expense of others, but for the excellence of self. You know, I'm not talking about,
I will destroy my enemies.
No, we're all going to have fun, but I'm going to kick your butt. You know, that's just what's going to happen.
Exactly.
That's, exactly. You know, there's different energy for that. But, but participation trophies, I think they... Hello.
That's Kenny.
Welcome to the show, Sir Kenny.
Hi, everybody.
He definitely have cold weather. I've not seen a cold weather in some time. Participation trophies, though, I think they inspire weakness to some degree.
I don't believe in participation trophies.
I'm just wondering where you got the idea of participation trophies from what I said. All I said was, is it depends on how you define winning. You define winning in two different ways, and yet somehow
I... There's only one way. If you win, you win. That's it. Don't bring the Mangetta out, because he's coming out. He's coming out to let you know.
There's only one way.
You win or you don't. Okay? That's just the thing.
Yeah, he was saying that there's no such thing as saying, okay, I won, I came in eighth place, so I won, but I was the eighth one who won. No, you're the first or you're done.
Yeah, you're first or you're a loser. And I don't think losing, you know, makes you a loser. Right.
Right.
A loser. But you're not the winner. So let's just accept it. And I think when we can get past stories around losing and winning, then the beating... Those up, the guilt, the shame, the pain. Okay, I didn't win. I don't have that accolade. Do I have sufficient desire to win to put the work in for me to be a winner next time? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, let me excel. Now, there is winning the grand competition, there's winning against yourself. So, for example, you know, I may not win a race, but I beat my personal best. I can take that on, that in the competition with myself, I won. I didn't win this race, but I won the competition with myself. I will continue to excel at that. There are some people, you know, those people that are going up against Usain Bolt, they knew they weren't going to get gold, right? You weren't getting gold, bruv. Like, Usy B's on the track. You're not getting gold. But maybe you're going to push yourself to get the best that you've ever gotten before.
Mm-hmm. So this is where I have to ask you the question, because you just came down on me pretty hard. I'm not complaining, but you came out on me pretty hard about this winning thing, that there's just a winner and there's a loser and that's it.
There is, but the different competitions. But these are two different competitions. So it's definition of the competition.
So please explain to me the difference between the guy who finishes in eighth place and betters his score and a participation.
Participation is supposed to be for the bin. So for the race, he didn't win the race, but he beat his personal best.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's not the winning that deserves definition, it's the competition. So in terms of the definition of the competition of the race, first, second, and third, everyone else is just the participant. celebrating you, but that's what you are. Myself, I came in 8th, I came in 9th, but last year I came in 10th or I came in 11th. Mm-hmm. So I have a celebration point and I have something to build on. Maybe I don't have the capacity to be on the podium, but I do have the capacity to better myself. We always have the capacity to better ourselves. There are physical limitations for some of us on what we can do. I'm never going to be doing slam dunks. Why? I'm 5'9" and change. It's just not on the cards for me. I accept that. I'm not going to beat myself up if I didn't win the dunking competition. But if I get closer to the net because I've been doing exercise, cool. But maybe it's better for me to focus on my 3 points or my 2 point or my layup and excel at doing that. There's a whole thing of playing to your strengths and mm-hmm. beating yourself up over the weaknesses. Maybe people coming in 8th and 9th should be looking at a different race or a different sport where they are actually going to be able to excel.
Yeah.
There's a mental component, I think, to beating yourself up by doing something that you're never going to win at, because the brain knows that you didn't win. It knows that you lost.
I still find that a little convoluted, but I'm seeing some clarity there. So that is an improvement. And so we'll give you an improvement win on that one.
yeah. But I wasn't in that competition, so I lost. And I'm happy to accept that I lost. I wasn't in the improvement race. I didn't sign up for that one. I signed up for the convert you to my idea. It didn't work, so I lost. Simple. There's no emotional attachment to that. It's just a fact. There were winners, and I wasn't one of them. Therefore, I didn't win. And I think losing and being a loser, I think there's a mix-up there.
Well, I agree with that, yes. I still think it's rather odd that you lost as something that you didn't enter the competition on, because you said you didn't enter it, so I'm not
No, but I lost. No, I said I didn't do a competition with myself. Because you said the competition with – you improved, yay. I didn't sign up for that one. No medal for me. The competition that I was signed up for, presenting my argument, it failed. Okay, cool.
Okay.
Next time I'll be better equipped.
All right. Well, I guess then the way I can translate that, if you will, into my own way of thinking is you got better at achieving your goal.
Yes. And that is a big part of life, continuing to improve and get better. And as we improve, some point we may win a race and some point we may change the race that we're running. But the aim is to keep getting better and keep doing and giving our best.
And the way I look at it is every time that I get better, I applaud myself because that was another win.
Uh-oh. And you are welcome to that. And you're welcome to that race. But that race only has one participant. That's you. The race with the other people, we didn't win. And that's okay. We won the race with us. Do we want to keep racing against ourselves and stay in this race? Yes. But that's positive. Not, I lost the race, I lost the race, I lost the race. Okay, change the race. Because that same energy is going to get translated into other areas of our life too. Someone that keeps running the 100 meters and coming in last, they're improving their score, but they're coming in last. That is going to have a negative impact on their ability to win in other areas that they may have actually had the beans to start coming first, or at least podium.
Which I think translates to make sure you know what competition you're signing up for. I mean, personally for myself, I wouldn't actually go to the Olympics first and foremost to enter a walking competition, even though I like mm-hmm. to walk, mm-hmm. just because I'm not interested in putting myself in a place to look totally humiliated. It's just not interesting to me at all.
This doesn't excite me. It's just like,
not
like,
at all.
Like chess, for example. As soon as I keep winning against someone at chess, I bounced. I need to play someone. I prefer that I've done my best at chess and lost. Why? Because it's showing me areas of my game to work on. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure. Even a category master, right? I've got like maybe a 1600-ish score. You might find me around the 1600. That's basic in chess levels.
Yeah, I didn't even mm-hmm. know chess had math.
Sorry?
I didn't know chess had math.
It's got scores. It's got scores. It's got scores. It's just got scores.
Already averted. Nope.
but that's with that. So with jiu-jitsu, like when you have a white belt, the aim when you're training against people that don't have white belts isn't even to win. It's to not get killed quickly. Delay the time that you're going to get killed in. Then when you're at blue, you want to do a little bit of killing and delay the killing. Then as you get higher, you're aiming for different new levels of mastery. When I go on the mat as a white belt, my aim isn't to win. It's not to die quickly. I'm going to lose, but lose slowly. That is part and parcel of the process. And I'm okay with that. But that's the competition that I'm signing up for. I've consciously gone in there knowing I'm going to die here, but how quickly am I going to get tapped out?
Agreed.
Who knew there was such an art and science to the martial arts? I had no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, that's a good way to wind up. So, interesting. We start off with dark matter. We end up in, I don't even know what to describe this. This is like winning, but not being worried about it. I don't know. What do you call this?
Not being a sore loser.
Not being a sore loser. Yeah, that's good. That's a good way to describe it. So, okay, good. Well, Alex, once again, it was great to have you back. I hope you're going to be back next week.
I hope so too.
With another t-shirt.
All the t-shirts.
Perhaps one that will know the meaning of.
Hey, I don't even care if I know the meaning of it. I just want to see you wearing the t-shirt because then I know you're on the show.
True.
That's a victory for me, by the way. Just saying.
Love it, guys. Love it.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. Thank you all to our podcast listeners as well. And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.